Species.
Unite.
Which person do you want to be? Do you want to be the person who says it's a systemic issue and contributes to be a part of a problem? Or do you want to be a person who sees that this is injustice, like the way you just accepted, and wants to do something about it?
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Novogratz. This is Species Unite. We have a favor to ask. If you like today's episode and you have a spare minute, could you please rate and review Species Unite on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts? It really helps people to find the show. This conversation is with Faraz Harsini. Faraz is a cultivated meat bioprocessing senior scientist at the Good Food Institute. But today we're going to talk about his work with university students, our future leaders. He does that work as the founder and the CEO of Allied Scholars for Animal Protection, or ASAP, a nonprofit that supports and mentors student advocates and future vegan leaders for the abolition of cruelty to humans and non-humans. Thank you so much for doing this today, Frost.
Of course.
I've been following you for a while, and I've been wanting to get you on here, so I'm glad we did. I want to talk about Allied Scholars for Animal Protection, but I would love to talk about you first and how this all became your life, how it all started.
I think I always really cared for animals and the environment and people. I remember when I was in college, I was always concerned about labor kids, and the environment was really important to me. So that's why I even switched my major to study environmental issues. I also remember I was against hunting and really against hunting and, animal testing even. But, of course, I never really heard of veganism. Veganism isn't even a word in my language, or at least back in the day, we didn't even have veganism. So I'm originally from Iran. I did my undergrad there. So this whole time, I care about the environment, people, animals, but I wasn't even vegetarian. Animal welfare, I never heard of it in terms of farmed animals. Until I left Iran, and when I was about 22, 23, ironically, I was trying to design a poster to ask other Iranians to not buy goldfish for Persian New Year, because that's a tradition that Iranians buy goldfish live. On the table, not to eat them, of course, but just it's a symbol of wealth and happiness and livelihood, I think. But it was millions of fish died in the process every year. I was this is stupid. We should change that. Just because it's a tradition, it doesn't mean that we should keep doing it. So I asked one of my friends to help me, and she was vegetarian at the time, and she said it doesn't really make sense because you literally eat fish. You literally eat other animals, and you're trying to save this goldfish here. I was butthurt, and I didn't like to hear that. Didn't like her for 3 months. Didn't really tell her anything, but it hurt my ego. And I was what do you mean? I'm doing my best, At the time, just before that, I almost got killed in protest in Iran. I was I almost got killed, and you're telling me I'm not good enough. You're judging me. Didn't say any of that, but that's what I was thinking. 3 months later, one day I was eating out, and I finally said no. I said, I'm vegetarian. That's how it started.
I've seen you talk, and I've heard some of your talks online. And you often talk about human rights in the same talk as animal rights. Will you talk a little bit about your background, being gay and from Iran, and how that connects to, since you've been vegan, what you've experienced?
So, two things. One was basically my participation in protests. So these were protests against the regime, and we were basically peacefully asking for basic human rights that are lacking, especially freedom of speech. In these peaceful protests, some of them turned into really violent shit shows. I don't have a better word for it. Police and anti-riot police and paramilitary forces started like beating people. I've been in situation where I was tear gassed. A person with one of these anti-riot police once came to me and, you know, he came for me. He came to like beat the crap out of me, but someone else just appeared in front of him and he just decided to go after the other guy. In another instance, paramilitary forces broke into my university and somebody ran after me with a machete to really just kill me. I've never been that scared in my life. I remember even like 2 hours later, my heart was still beating super fast. So that was really, you know, one experience that I had. And the other one, which I guess I really didn't understand at the time, but is the fact that I'm gay, but I never really accepted it when I was in Iran. So I can't really say I was suffering because I knew. But what I knew was I was always attracted to guys, but I was trying to not accept myself, which was so much harder than like accepting yourself and just keeping it a secret, because at least you're not fighting yourself. You're like, all right, I just have a big secret. But for me, it was fighting myself and not accepting myself, thinking that I'm sick, thinking that I grow up, it'll go away. Maybe I should force myself to have a girlfriend. It's not natural. And then, you know, because of censorship, nobody talks about it, right? So homosexuality could be punishable by death. So no one comes to you and talks about these feelings, right? So you literally think that you are the only one in the world who thinks that way. You're just asking yourself, again, it's not in the like the US. Even here, even if your back, you know, family is super conservative and religious, all that, at least you hear it in the news. At least your university probably has a LGBT club. None of that. You just never hear anything about it. You just think that you're sick and why are you so different from every other guy? What's wrong with you? So I think that was really the hardest part. I think the way to me all this connect is by the way that, you know, when we think about human rights, what is our approach? When we think about animal rights, what is our approach? I think veganism and animal rights is so beautiful in a way that it's the only movement that we are not doing it for ourselves. And for instance, if I did LGBT activism, it's great, which I did, you know, but in a way that it's benefiting me, right? Veganism is really the only movement that we come together to do something truly altruistic, not because of our own comfort and protection, but it's for, you know, other animals. I think people who have gone through certain experiences may have an easier way to kind of connect with other forms of injustice, you know. So for me, for instance, I would never want someone to advocate for LGBT rights, saying that we should kill fewer people in Iran for being gay. I want them to just say we shouldn't kill anybody, right? I don't want them to say, you know, let's just give them a little more space the night before we kill them. We need bigger cells for gay people before we kill them. I think the root cause that, you know, we should talk about the root of the problem. We shouldn't kill people for who they are. And I think that's something that I can borrow from other experiences that I have and apply it to veganism. And I think it really helps people. Sometimes when I show the footage to people and I say, you know, how does that make you feel? And they say, terrible, but it's a social issue. It's a systemic issue. I don't have any control over it. And I say, let me ask you this. Do you think this is injustice? And they say, yes. And all I ask them is that, do you say that for any other form of injustice? I actually give them one example, which is really helpful. So I say, I always ask myself, if I went back 200 years ago when slavery was norm and it was legal, what would I do in that situation? Would I just, and I know that it's wrong, right? So with what I know about racism and slavery, I go back 200 years ago. And do I want to say, hey, it's just a systemic issue, you know, I don't have any control over it, you know, what are we going to do with all the slaves if we get rid of slavery? And do I want to like bring all these excuses, or do I want to say not only it's wrong And I don't want to be a part of it, but also I want to actually educate others. I see that it is wrong and I want to talk to others. And then I tell them, I don't know what I would do, but I hope that I be the second person. I hope that I have the courage to say that, yes, it is a systemic issue, but I don't want to be a part of it. And then not only that, but I want to actually fix it. I want to educate others. And then I tell them that today the test for that is the way we treat animals. Which person do you want to be? Do you want to be the person who says it's a systemic issue and contributes to be a part of a problem? Or do you want to be a person who sees that this is injustice, like the way you just accepted, and wants to do something about it? And that actually makes them feel empowered, that they accept that this is a form of injustice and they feel empowered to now do something about it. So really making it connected with other forms of injustice, I think it's really powerful for people to see that and actually take action.
How did you start working in it, like to help animals?
I think when I went vegan, I posted on Facebook and asked to see if there was any other vegan around. And someone said, hey, your university had a club. It's no longer active, but this is the former president. Maybe you should contact her. And so I contacted her and she said, yeah, do you want to be the president? I mean, there was one member, so that would be the president. So I think I was president of my club for 7 years straight.
Did you get some members?
Yeah, I eventually grew the chapter. But I never had anyone more motivated than myself. And I struggled to find someone else to take over. And, you know, the moment I graduated, it died again. Seeing that happening really motivated me to do something about it because I realized that every time these clubs die, there are tons of vegans who could come to these clubs, could get active. There are so many opportunities to make new vegans, inspire vegans to have impactful careers. And all those opportunities are missed every time that these clubs die. And the fact that another thing was, you know, I was so new to veganism. I was like, and I was in graduate school. So you can imagine that most undergrad, you know, they're 18, 19. They just became vegan. They don't know anything about animal rights activism, different campaigns. So they basically do the first thing that they come across. They just do that. It could be a cage-free campaign. It could be a protest. It could be PETA. It could be anything. So it's not like they understand what works, what doesn't work in a systematic manner. You know, they just get absorbed to the first thing that they come across, if they're lucky to come across anything at all. I had to figure a lot of things by myself. I wasted time. If I went back with what I know today about activism, I could be so much more effective. And so just seeing how much time and resources we are wasting, and on the other hand, how much potential we have in universities, that's something that really got me more motivated today. But yeah, so that's how I started my activism with my school. I did that for 7 years. Then I graduated, worked in biopharma for a couple of years. My work was basically designing drugs and proteins to treat infectious diseases, including COVID and influenza and pandemics, cancer. But I always knew that this was temporary because I knew that my passion was veganism, but I just wasn't really sure how I could use my background, because I was like, clearly with a, you know, doctorate in biomedical sciences, if I just go leaflet, that's probably not the best way to use my time.
No, it's not.
So what is that thing that I can contribute so it's not a waste of my education? And one day I was having coffee at the break room in the pharmaceutical company, and the IT guy comes to me and says, you know, for us, maybe you should just start your own nonprofit. It's super easy. I was like, what do you mean? I was like, it's super easy. You just, you know, fill out some paperwork. And then if I had known how hard it was, I would not have started it. So I'm so glad he misled me. That was the best misinformation of my life. He said, just find an angle that no one else is doing. I was like, anything I do, someone else is doing. But it just came to me in one, you know, at that moment, that it's the university work. And I was already doing that. I was trying to train the students, and I realized that there is no unified structure for students. They just come together, they have potlucks, they waste time, they don't do activism. 2 years later, the club dies. And I got curious. We studied top 100 universities. We realized from top 100, less than 30 had an active chapter, an active vegan club. And less than 10 actually do any kind of activism. So it was like, that's such a huge waste of potential. Like, I just couldn't believe it. So I made it my mission to fix that. So that's how... I quit that job in pharmaceutical company. I joined GFI. So that's great because now I can use my background to, you know, help alternative proteins.
For people who don't know, will you just explain what GFI is?
So it's a Good Food Institute. That's a nonprofit that works on promoting alternative proteins. So that's plant-based proteins, cultivated meat, and other fermented product. It's a US-based nonprofit. So we don't actually make any food, but we work with policymakers, with the government. I'm in the science and technology department. So my job is to look at challenges in scaling up cultivated meat and alternative proteins. So the question I'm trying to answer is that how can we make it cheaper? How can we make it reach price and taste parity and scale up? But yeah, so I get to do that. I can use my background for alternative proteins. At the same time, my passion working in universities and helping students.
And your university, the nonprofit's called Allied Scholars for Animal Protection. When did it start and how big has it become? Like, are you in a lot of schools now?
Yeah, it grew really fast. So officially it started in 2022. That's when I got my nonprofit status. I would say for a year before that, I was kind of laying the ground, like by going to universities, making the connections. It was just not through a nonprofit. I was just doing that on my own. But that really made me become connected with a bunch of schools and know a couple of people that later I invited to join my nonprofit. And now we are in about 15 or 16 universities. So Harvard, MIT, Cornell, Columbia, Brown, University of Chicago, UPenn, Ohio State, University of Texas at Austin, and Sam Houston University, and yeah, Yale.
What does it look like when you say we are in these schools? Like, what's actually there?
So what we want is an actual animal rights group that is active and functional in each university. So my goal is top 100 universities. So we also looked at other successful groups and we realized that they're called the same exact thing in every club. But I realized with vegan organizations, each university has their own group. It's a different name. They have a different strategy. It can be like Veggie Cats, you know, Vegan Society, Vegetarian Society. One is like strictly for vegans. It says Vegan Society. The other one is animal welfare. One is environmentally focused. One is super like abolitionist. They have like different acronyms, Animal Rights Coalition, SACA, BOA. And I was like, if you're going to a college, you have no idea what your club is going to be called. You have no idea what they do. And by the way, none of them, almost none of them, I would say 99% of them don't do any kind of activism at all. So they're, if they did anything, which was very few of them, it would be like a movie screening or mostly like a potluck. And potlucks are good. I don't have anything against potlucks. But you can't really find new vegans. You can't really inspire vegans to dedicate their careers to veganism, right? So I made it my mission. So the way I think is, if I'm a vegan and I'm walking in a university, if I don't find the vegan club, that means that I failed. So my failure is if there is a vegan in a university and they don't know about the vegan activities in their university, that's how I know I failed. So one solution we had for that was putting up posters that say, veganism is a moral urgency. Join the club. Join your ASAP club. And again, so something we try to fix is that instead of having different names and different strategies, now every university has an ASAP chapter. So if you're vegan, you just look at, you know, look up allied scholars, you know, you look up what chapters we have. And once you know that, you already know what we do, you know, it's not going to be different strategies in different schools. So it's unified. And then we get that support to students and make sure that they can actually have a lasting impact. So when the students graduate, it doesn't die, because every time it dies, the club dies. We just miss opportunities and waste money, time, resources, all that. We encourage the students to be on campus doing activism, you know, whatever that is. It could be Elwood's dog meat. We do human breast milk. You know, it's a satire. We give people like oat milk, but, you know, it says like human milk, free range, grass fed. Just joke about it. But, you know, these events make a lot of noise. People come up like, dog meat, oh my God. And then we're just like, all right, you know, why are you angry? We have discussions. And then once we build a community, then we provide them with education and, you know, career advice. We really want to channel that potential to impactful careers. So we don't want to leave it at that. We want to really train them to find their voice and become active.
Do they have any effect on the food on campus?
Yeah, so we have three pillars at each school. One of them is outreach, to have visibility, make new vegans, find other vegans. The second pillar is education. So once we have them, we educate and empower them. Movie nights, talks, seminars, all of that. And the third pillar that we have is actually working with menu changes. So we have different initiatives. One of them is at Columbia University, that for the first time we are actually asking for 100% plant-based universities. So we are working with plant-based university campaign in the UK. So we are partnering. We successfully got UT Austin to start a fully dedicated vegan line. We definitely want to work with dining halls to change the menus. But we also realized that, like, one reason that it doesn't work that well is because oftentimes there is not enough student push. So we really try to develop that community in each school and have an army of students to, you know, push for these campaigns. Otherwise, it would be nonprofits working with dining halls, and dining halls say, we don't want to change because, you know, there's not enough demand for it.
Right. So you need to show the demand. But there's so many, especially nowadays, I feel like there's so many vegan kids in universities, like way more than there ever have been. So are you seeing a lot of people signing up?
Yeah. And I'm still, we are not at the stage that I envision. So I'm like, my goal is to be as good as Christians in universities. Like, it's impossible to miss them, whether it's like snowing, raining, you know, tornado. They're always there, you know, doing whatever Christians do. I really want to have the same presence. And the way I think about it is, a lot of these universities have 50,000, 70,000 students. Even if 1%, which is a very low estimate, is vegan, you should still have like hundreds to, you know, thousands of vegans, depending on the percentage and the student population. Where are they? You know, you look at the average participation in any vegan club, if they exist, it's like 5 people, you know. We have hundreds of vegans. Where are they? So my goal is to find them, train them, inspire them, and make new vegans in the process. Because if you don't do activism, if you don't do outreach, we're not going to make new vegans. And as a result, our movement will suffer. And also, we know that we don't have enough money, right? The funders in our movement are very few people, right? So what happens 10, 20, 30 years from now, right? What happens if these people just go away, stop funding the movement, something happens, right? So we need to really invest in the next generation, make sure we have the future doctors, the future Dr. Clapper, the future Dr. Greger, the future Mayor Adams, the future funders, all those people, all these professionals. And something they have all in common is that fire for veganism, right? So we really want to inspire students to have that fire and do something with their lives.
That's the best place to start. First of all, I think most people, a lot of people, there's probably been 200 people on the show, mostly all vegan. And I would say like 80% went vegan at that age, like college. It's like the most powerful time, I think, for people to really decide who they want to be in the world in that sense. And so to skip that and for us not to nurture it, it's a big waste. You're right.
Yeah, we really want to change that culture, right? We want to normalize veganism. We want to make sure that there are so many levels into it, like layers. You have vegans that are not necessarily thinking about dedicating their careers to veganism. They're just vegan, right? So there is a huge potential to inspire them. And I have done that. I know it is possible. And I get emails from people who say, I was just a vegan. Now I saw your lecture and I want to like dedicate my career to it. And I'm not particularly great. I'm not saying, this is not a compliment to myself. I'm just saying like, no one had ever appeared to their life and say, hey, this is the most urgent thing that you can do with your life. You know, you should dedicate your careers and I'm here to support you. We have a lot of conversations in universities that, you know, the guy says, actually, I've been thinking about going vegan. I'm like, it's as if like they were waiting for someone to come to their life and say, do it already. And we get to be that person. And it frustrates me when I'm not in those other universities where so many people are walking and they're so close to go vegan and I'm not there to tell them, do it already. So you have the low-hanging fruits, and then you also have people who are not going to go vegan immediately, but you can plant the seed. So years later, they may go vegan. And worst case scenario, even if they never go vegan, they get the education. So at least they understand what veganism is. At least when their friend goes vegan, they're supportive. So there is so many layers, and it's all interconnected. And when we get to be on campus and provide this education on the ground, I think we hit every single layer.
I think it's so necessary in this movement, and I'm really happy that it's happening and you're doing it. And so thank you.
It's nothing but my duty, right? We can't really undo the harm we did before going vegan. And so really all we can do is to dedicate our lives to it. And as I always say, you know, statistically, logically, rationally, mathematically, show me something that is more important, more impactful than dedicating one's life to veganism. Show me something else that is more impactful. I'll quit my job today. I'll go do that. But there is not, right? What can we possibly do with our lives that impacts every single living being in the world, you know, every single animal, every single sentient being on this earth? So
I agree. Well, thank you, Frost, very much.
My pleasure.
To learn more about Faraz and to learn about Allied Scholars for Animal Protection and the Good Food Institute, go to our website, speciesunite.com. We will have links to everything. We're on Facebook and Instagram at Species Unite. If you have a spare moment and could do us a favor, please subscribe, rate, review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. It really helps people find the show. If you'd like to support the podcast, we would greatly appreciate it. Go to our website, speciesunite.com, and click donate. I'd like to thank everyone at Species Unite, including Gary Knudsen, Caitlin Pierce, Amy Jones, Paul Healy, Santina Polke, Sam Kosel, and Anna Kallner, who wrote and performed today's music. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day.